We've been looking for a home in a great neighborhood, but they're all too small. Then we heard about the FHA 203K loan program, where we can add a room or two when we purchase and get a single loan to cover both the purchase and the room addition. What a great idea!
Hey there, welcome to the radio show, Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young. We appreciate you hanging in there and joining us. It's funny, during the week I get calls all the time and people say, I recognize your voice from the radio show. And I think that's interesting. Why didn't you call in and talk to me on the radio show? So if you want to be part of the show today and you call in and talk to us about any of your renovation problems you've had or any business that you've done that is interesting to others, we'd love it. You can reach us at 888-627-6008. Toll free and ask your questions or comment, make your comments. We have a lot of fun that way, and it makes the show more interesting, so we appreciate it. As always, there's always consultants that feel that there are too many consultants and that they don't want to get into it. Let me tell you what's happened is the list hasn't changed much, but there's a lot of people on the HUD approved list that don't do 203K anymore, and HUD just doesn't want to remove them. I talked to a fellow this weekend, yesterday, that didn't even realize that every 2 years you're supposed to renew. Hello? That means that whoever's doing the renewal is picking on me because they're asking me all the time. You know, hey, did you get your renewal in? Of course I got my renewal in. Didn't you receive it? Oh, yeah, we just checking. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but they've got two friends of mine are still on the HUD list as approved active consultants. One has been dead over a year. The other one has been dead for about 3 or 4 years now. And he's still active on the HUD list. So they don't keep that list up to par like they should. And it's annoying when you have to call five people only to find out that a couple of them aren't even going to answer the phone ever. You know, I mean, I'd like to be on there forever and not have to renew. Wouldn't that be fun? So if you're going to be on the HUD list, try to keep your listing up. You do have to renew every 2 years. And if you don't, you could be removed. Although, who knows? They might not ever have to renew you. So, anyway, I've been distracted. Sorry about that. While most 203Ks and other renovation loans go off without a hitch, from time to time you may find that you need some help, someone to talk to. Maybe if you're a consultant that's not in your marketing area, feel free to pick the phone up and call us. We talk to a lot of consultants, mostly the ones we've trained, but now and then we get a call from somebody else. We retrain people all the time. So if you feel your training lacked in any area, you may want to try a training that's been around since 1994 when consultants were first brought into the 203K. And if you were consulting on 203K prior to 1994, well, bless your heart, because there weren't any consultants then. So anyway, have fun with it. Let's get on with this thing. If we have a website called 203K911.com. 203K911.com, and you can go on there, tell us about your issues that you're having, and if we can help you over the phone or on the internet, then we don't charge for that. We only charge a small fee if, in fact, you ask us to do it for you. If you ask us to make those contact calls that we suggest you do. So let's see what's in store for us today. Oh, by the way, before I get into that, this weekend I had a wonderful visit from a consultant who came by my house. We had a fun time. We spent, I think, 4 or 5 hours together. Enjoyed the time we spent with him. I couldn't impress enough on anybody that this is my golf. I'm the world's worst golfer, but 203K is my golf. So when you call me, do not apologize for putting me on my golf course, okay? I enjoy it. I love helping people. So if you have a question, you're running into problems, you're not getting the answers, give us a call. Anybody who's taken our training, we suggest that they put us on their speed dial. And if a question comes up in the field, just dial us. Call us up and say, Mike, we're in the field. I got a question I can't answer. Would you help us and put it on a speaker? Let them ask their question. I'll answer the question. And then I don't want any recognition. Just say, goodbye. We'll talk to you later. And get off the phone. I want those people to believe you, in fact, are the go-to person. I want you to go in there and be the person they come to with their next question. The last thing I want is 50,000 realtors calling me every day wanting to know an answer to a question. I get a kick out of it. Normally, I give seminars to up to 2,500 or 3,000 people. And those are wonderful. I enjoy them. But once in a while, it's good just to sit down one-on-one and talk to somebody and actually dig into their specific problems. And that's kind of what we did this weekend. And I appreciate it more than they know. So getting back into where we are today, let's see what we got in store. Feasibility. What's a feasibility report for the buyer and when should it be used? Feasibility reports are reports that tell you what it will take to bring this house to minimum property standards. Okay, the minimum property health and safety standards. Nothing more. It's on our price list if you want to look and see what these cost. But if you're looking to buy a house and it's not listed, so you don't have any idea what it's worth, your realtor can do what they call a CMA, a comparative market analysis, and give you an idea of what the typical or average house in that neighborhood is selling for with your size and dimensions and so forth, bedroom count, room count. But what you want to know is what's wrong with this house? What is it going to take to bring this house to minimum standards? The way I look at minimum standards is these are things that every homeowner should be keeping up on a regular basis. You know, if a window gets cracked or broken, fix it. Don't leave it sit like that until you're ready to sell the house and expect someone to pay full price when you've got a broken window. Somebody's got to fix that window. And the person living in it or the seller should be fixing that window or adjusting the price downward so that you can fix that window with your renovation loan or whatever. So, but it's a good question. You know, there's also a lot of confusion in the lender side of this thing. Some lenders will call you up. I've got a turkey in Florida, calls you up and he wants a feasibility on every 203K. He wants a feasibility. And what he doesn't really want is feasibility. What he wants is an SOR. A scope of work, a scope of renovation, a scope of rehab. So he wants to know the whole scope, and he wants to know exactly how much it's going to cost to fix this up. Well, a feasibility is not to see what it takes to fix that house up the way they want it. It's all about giving you a rough estimate of what it would take to bring this house to minimum property standards. Now, we also sell what we call an enhanced feasibility analysis, where we will put in all the things the borrower wants on top of minimum property standards. You know, even though the kitchen cabinets are okay the way they are, most buyers would change it to update the kitchen. And though the bathroom is okay, it's functional and it's just dated, most buyers would change the bathroom and update it. These things also will affect your appraisal. So if you've got a brand new kitchen or a brand new bath, updated bathrooms, that certainly will be better than the old bathroom that was in there. And they compare it to the repairs and the condition of the other houses in the area that they market, that were marketed. So these things are all fun and games that you have to know. But a buyer is looking for a home that needs substantial work. But he wants to know, how much will those repairs cost? A feasibility is a good way to do that. Now, I don't really like doing feasibilities. I do a lot of them, but I don't like them because I would rather, if you make an offer on this house subject to your inspections and you think it's going to be $50,000 to repair the house, and if it is $50,000 or less, this is a good deal, then I recommend you ordering a full consultation. And in the comment section of our order blank, put in there, you know, we think this is going to be $50,000 project. If it's much more than that, we won't be able to buy it. And what we'll do on our end is we'll go out there and look at the property. And if we see $85,000 or $90,000 worth of work to be done, we'll turn it into a feasibility. A feasibility analysis or a feasibility report is an excellent tool to give your realtor for negotiating. Now, the seller, they're going to do a feasibility on their own before they ever show their house, so that an investor with all cash can't come in there and lowball them and get the property. So the seller will do a feasibility. What does it take to bring this to HUD's minimum property standard? And he'll take that report and he'll say, okay, it's going to take $28,000 or $88,000, whatever it might be. And he prices accordingly and they list it. Now some investor comes in and says, oh, this is going to cost $300,000 to fix. No, it isn't. To bring it to HUD's minimum standards, it's going to be $28,000, not $288,000. So it makes the seller, it gives the seller confidence in the price they're offering. And also, there's a lot of sellers out there that say, well, I've had three houses of my model sell on this block for $300,000 in the past year. So I want $300,000 for mine. What he isn't looking at is all three of those other houses had updated kitchens and bathrooms, and his doesn't. So sometimes it takes a feasibility analysis to bring your seller to reality, to the reality that he isn't selling the same kind of house, even though it's the same model and same year build and same size as the other three houses on his block. His house is not like them. And it's not like them by the feasibility amount. But a buyer is looking at a home that needs substantial work. You know, he needs to know what that cost is going to be. If it's $50,000, we got a deal. But if it's $150,000, we don't have a deal. So the solution is, one, to have a contractor provide a cost estimate to make those repairs. You know, what do you do with that estimate? Use it to make your offer. But what is the contractor going to estimate? He doesn't have a list, so he's going to go in there with you, and you're going to walk him through and say, well, we're going to update the kitchen. Well, no, not for minimum property standards is all you can negotiate. I mean, you can try to blow smoke, but, you know, I've bought and sold over 300 buildings in my time, so you're not going to blow smoke at me. I know exactly what's going to go and what it's worth, so forth. But the seller is only responsible, in my opinion, to bring the house to minimum property standards. So anything for minimum property standards is a seller paid or seller concession on that property. If, in fact, somebody else wants to enhance the kitchen or update the kitchen and bathrooms, those are on the buyer. You can do anything you want to that house, but that's a buyer's choice, and those things aren't negotiable with the seller beyond minimum property standards. So I hope that makes sense to everybody. If it doesn't, call me and ask me. You can reach us at 888-627-6008. So feasibility analysis. So the buyer is going to get a feasibility if he doesn't know how much to offer for the property and he wants to find out a little more about those those costs and fees that it's going to take to fix this house up, bring it to minimum property standards. Knowing that number is all powerful. The borrower may also want to know the cost of additional repairs that they may want to make and add to the mix. We call that our enhanced feasibility analysis, where we price out the minimum property standards as a separate number, and then we price out those items that you want to do. And by the way, you can go to any of my websites, start with 203konline.com, and look along the strip at the very top, and you'll see project estimator or job estimator. Anybody can go onto that and put in the job information. Yes, you'll have to give us your email address because we're going to email a written report to you, but you can cost out your updated kitchen yourself and your updated bathroom and so forth, and it gives you costs based on home tech services, 50 plus years of experience in pricing per zip code. So it's a very accurate, realistic number that contractors will do the work for. So, hey, we're going to take a short break here. Please call us at 888-627-6008 if you want to be part of the show. And we'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned.
We found the perfect house, but there's been no updating it for many years. Then we heard about the FHA 203K, where we can buy that home and get the money to fix it up all in one low interest rate loan. What a great idea.
Hey, we're back with you. Call us at 888-627-6008 if you want to be part of the show. So let's get back into it. Young or new investors might call out a consultant for a feasibility analysis in order to hone their skills at pricing out a project. I mean, there's a lot of people that call themselves investors. And in fact, they're paying all cash and there's no risk. They're buying all cash and they're buying it below market. They have discovered that. But they have no idea how much it's going to cost. They don't know if they're going to make $10,000 in profit on this house or $30,000 or $100,000 or $130,000 for that matter. So if you're a young investor, you're just getting started, we recommend that you call a consultant. You know, we can finance those properties for you under the Homestyle. You can flip with a Homestyle. It's a Fannie Mae product. Works just like the 203K. It's also good for second homes. So anyway, if you're a young investor and you're just getting into this, hire a feasibility analysis. Hire a consultant for a feasibility. They're going to give you a written report that tells you where the costs they see are going to have to be put into this home. In fact, if I were you, I'd order an enhanced feasibility and let them price out all the things that you might want to do to that home to add value to increase your profitability. Okay. It's a good thing to do, and it will be a great learning experience. You know, I get a kick out of people who they don't want to spend any money for their education. But let me tell you, if you've gone to college, you've spent a lot of money for your education. If you don't go to college, you do, in fact, go to school. You learn in the school of hard knocks. And when you learn in the school of hard knocks, it's costly. So it's better to pay a little bit up front and learn from that. Asking for some feasibility blank sheets so you can do your own feasibilities later on. Get yourself a home tech services book, cost analysis, estimator. And you can do your own bid specifications and get accurate contractor prices, including labor and materials. So it's always interesting to listen to the scuttlebutt around a water cooler. And I happened to be doing that the other day at a convention. But there's a common misconception about the role of the consultant and what the consultant isn't. And that's a more important thing. Homeowners tend to think the consultant is going to manage the project. Well, no, that's not what the consultant does. That's a project manager. And you got to realize the consultant is only your consultant until the loan closes and the construction begins. And if you're a consultant out there, a new one or old one, I'm sure the old ones are already doing it, but the new ones, you want to make that distinction very clear when you do your consultation. I am your consultant up until it closes. Once it closes escrow and the work begins, I'm your inspector. I'm going to be working for the lender and HUD, and always in your best interest, but I'm going to be making sure that the work is done in a professional, workmanlike manner. Okay, we're not going to let the contractor get away with bringing in lesser materials than we specified. That's why we're this, you know, while we help you specify that, the more detail you can give us on the specifications, the closer to this finished product that you wanted, that you desired, is going to happen. You know, if you say, give me a new refrigerator, and you're thinking of this $2,000 zero, what do they call it, sub-zero refrigerator, and you say, give me a stove, and you're thinking of that $800 Bosch or that $1,000 Bosch. And when you don't put those specs in your bid, then the contractor is going to say, okay, I see I got this refrigerator on sale for $800 and not the $2,000 one you wanted because you didn't specify clearly what you wanted. So if you don't care, your consultant might not too. But if you, as a homeowner, want this home to be your home, I recommend you getting out to wherever you have to go to see the equipment that you want and get the model numbers. Get the brand names and model numbers. There was a place, my client had all their kitchen appliances set up, and it was $4,800, $4,900. Say, okay, I've got everything. I got the names. I went to us-appliances.com. us-appliances.com, and I got the brand name they wanted, and I clicked on package deals. I got all the equipment they wanted, from the range hood to the dishwasher and the all the stuff, you know, the gas range, the refrigerator. I got all of that stuff priced the same list, exact same brands, free delivery anywhere in the United States. And it was $2,900 versus $4,800. And I said, why do you want to pay more if the delivery is free anywhere in the country? I don't know who these people are, but I do know that I hear that they're very reputable. And you get the brand names that you specify at reduced prices. As a landlord, I had 300 rental units at one time. It was a constant replacing this and replacing that. And I found out there's a company called Wilmart. It's an offshoot of Walmart, and it's where they sell off all of their slightly damaged secondhand, brand new stuff, but it's got some damage to it at landlord prices. So landlords, if you're getting, or young investors, if you're buying a fourplex and you got to put four ranges and four refrigerators for this, for that, you may do well to get in there and talk to Wilmart. By the way, this US-appliances, just to be fair to the RC Willies of this country, they will match the prices, and so will Best Buy. That's what I've heard. And give you free delivery if you bring in the papers that you are going to buy it from US-appliances.com. So keep the business local, but make them toe the line. A homeowner quite often gets the mistake that we're managing the project. We're not managing the project. Realize the inspector, not the consultant, but the inspector part of me is going to be out there approximately once every 30 days. Now, if the contractor needs a draw more often than that, fine. If he's got a big lump of money coming, most contractors don't want to carry more than about $20,000 to $30,000 for your project, because they've got four or five projects going, and that would bankrupt them, okay? So what we want to do is we want to be sure and get out there, make sure that that the client understands, the homeowner understands, they are the contractor's boss. You are not the contractor's boss. It is up to them to call the contractor when they don't show up to work and say, hey, you guys not here today. What's going on? And get out there. So my next comment from a client, let's see, my 203K consultant isn't doing a very good job managing my contractor. Isn't that funny? Two in the same week. Well, I don't know how to put it to you. Your consultant, again, is not manager. Okay. The consultant helps you create the scope of work, bids the job so you have an idea what a fair price is for this work. And if your contractor beats it or is close to it, then that's, you know, you've gotten a good bid. But your consultant's job was over the day it closed escrow and the work started. Secondly, the consultant can assist you in finding a lender or a contractor if necessary. But you're going to do it a very particular way. We can't recommend a contractor, but we can give you a list of contractors to choose from if it helps you. Okay, a lot of consultants won't do that even. And HUD says we're not supposed to recommend anybody. Lenders are supposed to recommend consultants that have passed their criteria to be a consultant. But we have no trouble assisting a homeowner in picking a contractor from the bids that bid on the project. The lowest bid may not always be the best bid. You know, not long ago, we had a job where I bid the job at $82,000, and the first contractor was over $100,000. Second bid came in at $67,000. And, of course, the owner said, well, we'll take the $67,000 bid. Well, I said, that's fine. You can take that bid, but we're going to do this. I want to fund $82,000 because I know that's the fair price. The $67,000, obviously he's forgotten something, and it's probably his profit and overhead. Don't know that, but it likely would be. And once he realizes he doesn't have any profit and overhead at the end of all this work, he just disappears quite often. Once the loan closes, the consultant is no longer the consultant. However, we work for the lender as the draw inspector on our own projects. For the most part, nowhere in our job description does it say we have to or expected to manage the contractor. On the contrary, we consulted and told you that right up front. You, the homeowner, are the boss. You are responsible to choose the contractor. You are responsible to call the contractor and communicate your displeasure if they don't show up on the job when they should. As an inspector, we monitor the progress. We're typically out to see the property about every 30 days, more often as they need cash flow. Being there every day, like the homeowner, you're the one that most prepared to be the boss. Okay, the homeowner contractor agreement says that very clearly that once the project begins, the contractor should have someone on the project working each and every day until it's completed. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be at your house each and every day. He could be out picking materials up for your house. So, learn to be a manager. You know, I've been a manager since I was 16, now 71, so I've been a manager for a long, long time. Some people think too long, but in any case, hey, we're going to take a short break, but call us at 888-627-6008, toll-free. Be part of the show. We appreciate it, and you don't get so bored just listening to me ramble. We'll be right back after this short break.
We've been looking for a home in a great neighborhood, but they're all too small. Then we heard about the FHA 203K loan program, where we can add a room or two when we purchase and get a single loan to cover both the purchase and the room addition. What a great idea!
Welcome back. Call us at 888-627-6008 and be part of the show if you like. The other day I wrote an article for realtors. I love my realtors, my realtor clients. And it was actually, how would you like to sell every house you showed? You know, if I was a realtor, I would likely be selling nearly every house I took the time to show. Because number one, you listen to the client. The client tells you exactly what they want. And then you start putting a list of homes to go show them. Well, wouldn't it be better if you only showed them one and sold one every time you showed it? You know, that's entirely possible if you learn to use the FHA 203K or the home style loan. Or one of, there's a total of 9 renovation loans out there. The last we counted, 9. VA has one, 100% financing, and do the construction too. And still get 100% financing if that property qualifies. And that just means if it'll appraise. There's so many advantages for a realtor to use a 203K. You gain 10% on the appraised value. So if the appraisal comes in 5% low, no problem. Close the loan. It's still a good deal. If it comes in 10% low, no problem. Close the deal. You got a conventional loan. The people qualify conventionally, but the appraisal comes in 10 low. Turn it into an FHA loan and pick up the 10% on the appraised value. So many things that can do it. But if you're showing houses to somebody and you know what they're looking for, I'm looking for a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house, I want a 2-story, I want it in this neighborhood, and you just look through there and you find half a dozen houses like that, why don't you create a questionnaire? And as you take them out to show them the first house, say, in order to better serve you, we need to know what you think about this house. What would you change if this was your house to make it your ideal house? And make that list. And that list becomes your wish list for your 203K or home style renovation loan. And you can turn around and say, you know, if all this stuff was changed, you know, if it, you said you wanted a pool, well, that makes it a home style loan rather than a 203K because you can't build a new pool with the 203K. But if you're a realtor and you get this deficiency list, things that they would change to make it theirs, you say, you know, what if I told you this? Everything on your list here can be fixed exactly the way you want it. I think you ought to make an offer on this house today. Let's make an offer on this house, and we're going to do a 203K, and we're going to add all these things that you want in a wish list, and we're going to fix them all just the way you want them with your color choices. Wow. You're going to update that kitchen. You're going to give us, we're going to put in the kind of appliances that you pick. Brand new. You say, yeah, but this is only a 3-bedroom. No problem. We're going to add a bedroom. We can add a new master bedroom. So your bedroom will have brand spanking new framing, drywall, siding, roofing. You know, this could be your dream home with these changes that you've given me a list of. I would not be showing 10 houses to anybody. Okay, I would be showing 1 or 2 houses to everybody and getting that deficiency list and explaining to them how they can make this home theirs. You know, this house has got new carpeting, but you don't know what they covered up. Wouldn't it be sweet to put in your own color choices and put your own carpeting down? I bought a house once years ago. It was my first tract home It's 3,400 square feet. And my wife just wanted a brand new home, so we bought it. And when we went to take possession of it, the guy says, "Oh, excuse me, please take your shoes off before you come in the house." I said, "It's my house. I don't." He says, "It's not yours yet, so take your shoes off, please." Well, that was the wrong thing for him to have me do because I've got very sensitive feet. And when I started walking on this Berber carpet, it was like nails coming up through it, spikes coming up through the carpet. And I said, "You people," and I went over to the corner and I grabbed that carpet and I jerked it back. I wanted to see if they swept the floor underneath it. I said, "You didn't even sweep the floor because I got things coming up in my feet." And he said, "What are you doing? Don't tear that carpet up." And I said, "Never mind." You know, and I pulled it up, and lo and behold, it wasn't that they didn't sweep, but the rebond pad had not fully exploded. It wasn't rubber. It was plastic. And it hadn't turned to a soft foam because they didn't cure it properly, apparently. And there were spikes all through that. So I wear white socks quite often when I'm working. That day I had them on. The guy says, "You can't do this." And I looked at him and I said, I picked up my foot, held it up to him, and I look at my foot. And my sock was red with blood. I said, "This is disgraceful." So I walked back outside, put my shoes on, and came in the house again. And I said, "You can tear this carpet out. I don't want it." You know, so actually it wasn't the Berber carpet. It was a cheaper carpet that came with the house. 3,400 square foot house. They were going to give me a $100 credit if I didn't let them put the carpet in and I wanted to put my own in. So they came out. They took all the carpet out and took all the pad out. And I told them I wanted to inspect the new pad before they laid it down. And then once it was laid down, I wanted to inspect it before they put the carpet down. They were a little miffed at me, but understandably so. They finally acknowledged that I was right. Anyway, the fun part of this house was they didn't give me the carpet I wanted. And they're only going to give me a $100 credit. And I was rehabbing homes. So what I did was I had my crew there. I had 9 guys there with our carpet guys. And the day they did allow me to take my house over, they said, "Why are all these guys here? Are you going to move your stuff in?" I said, "No, we're going to take the carpet out." And what we did is I had my crew come in and remove all the carpet. And 2 guys put it on their truck, some of it, and took it up to my sister-in-law's house, and we recarpeted her entire house. And then I took the rest of it over to a brand new house that I was renovating. It wasn't brand new. It was an old house that I was renovating, but it was ready for carpet, and we put it in there. So I ended up carpeting 2 houses with it, or 3. I'm not sure now. It's been a while. But we recarpeted those houses, and then the rest of the crew got in with the brand new Berber carpeting that my wife wanted, and they carpeted the entire home. They were going to put carpet in the family room. We decided to put tile. I put 21-inch tiles with a diamond shape in between every other one, I think it was. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And then I come in and we knocked the tile cabinets out, or the tile countertops out, and put in granite slabs. So we redid the house the way we wanted it. But they were crazy. They wanted so much money to put granite in. And I said, "Granite's the cheapest thing I got going right now. It's cheaper than tile, for God's sakes. And you're going to charge me $8,000 to put the granite in? That's bizarre." I said, "I'll just put it in myself." So we ended up doing that. So let's talk a little bit about self-help under the FHA 203K program, because we get asked that a lot. I've got a guy right now this past week that asked me, he says, "You know, I am a job superintendent. I manage contractors all the time and subcontractors. Can I do the 203K myself and let me be the person that calls the subs? I can save a lot of money that way." Self-help under the FHA 203K loan guarantee program. Notice I said loan guarantee program. FHA is just an insurance company. That's all they are. They're not a lender. They don't loan the money. They merely guarantee the lender. If they loan their money, we guarantee that loan. So, but most lenders do not allow self-help at all under any circumstances. And then there's some other lenders that will allow self-help if you're licensed in the state that you are going to do your 203K. Now, if it's a state like Texas that does not license contractors, anybody can be a contractor in Texas tomorrow. You know, how hard is it to call subcontractors to do the work? Well, if you are in Texas and you are a homeowner and you are in a job that you hire subcontractors daily, you could probably do the 203K there. But most lenders are going to make sure that you are a licensed contractor in the state where your home is being built in order to let you be the contractor of record. Now, I probably do maybe a dozen a year, maybe one a month, where the contractor is building his own house and wants to be his own sub. But the lenders make it, you jump through so many hoops, it's sometimes not worth it. So if you're a contractor and you're licensed and you're doing a house there, maybe find a buddy that's a contractor and let him be the contractor of record. And that gives you and your wife both a chance to have someone else to yell at. Because if you're the contractor and you're trying to keep your business running and you're not spending the time on your job, that is a bad situation. And your wife will kick your butt. But you won't have anybody else to yell at but you. And you don't yell at you. She does. So it's just not a good thing. Let's see. We had a while back, we had a client. I only met one half. Oh, I see where this is going. I only met one half of the couples. Okay, the lady of the house was there at every draw. The contractors was there, and the lady that owned the house was there. And draw after draw, month after month. And nice lady, very nice. I didn't recognize her as somebody I knew. And I hadn't given it much thought. But only the wife was there at all the inspections, not the harm. Not out of the dog, but not the husband at all. In California, at least, either party can sign and obligate the other party. So, you know. But once the job was complete, the lady of the house indicated she would invite me to their house. My wife had passed away, and they were going to invite me to the housewarming. Maybe I could meet somebody there. Anyway, I called her back to accept the invitation when I did get it. And asked if I could bring anything. And when I arrived, there was a nice group of people there. And I spotted Catherine, and so I made my way over to her. And she acted happy to see me. And looking past me, the way into the kitchen, she said, "Oh, have you met my husband?" As I turned to see an old friend of mine. He didn't recognize me at first. But as soon as I saw him, I recognized him. And then the bells went off. And I realized Catherine and Jerry were running a PR company, and they did the PR for my nightclub years before. And once I reminded Jerry where we met, he said, "Oh my God, Catherine, why didn't you tell me it was Mike?" Yeah, you know. And it was kind of funny, but she and I hadn't recognized each other all those months. But it was a great reunion, and they promised not to ever let me get away from them again. It was a nice surprise. Can I replace a foundation with a 203K? That's the next question. Can I replace a foundation with a 203K loan? Yes, you can. In fact, we had one that was built on 4x4 posts planted right in the ground like fence posts, and then they built the house up on that. And we took that out, put everything on pier and post, and put a perimeter foundation on that one. I had another one that was built back in the 1800s, and it was like telephone poles with the creosote and everything. And there were six of them under this house. And then they put floor joists across, spanned it, and built the whole house around these posts. And the funny thing is that no settlement, no cracking, nothing. there was nothing wrong with that foundation, and it was built 200 years earlier. So it's just a lot of fun. We did one in San Rafael years ago that had a it was actually at Black Point, and the foundation was a 3 grade beams, and they were facing the water so that the water tide come in, the water could go up under the house. Tide went out, then they would go out. And a lender insisted that I make it a perimeter foundation. And I said, show me in the guideline where it demands a perimeter foundation, number one. And they said, well, I don't know where that is. And I said, well, that's because it doesn't exist. The HUD doesn't tell you you have to have a perimeter foundation. You can have any kind of foundation as long as it's a valid foundation. In this particular case, if I turn this thing into a swimming pool by putting ends on that foundation, when the tide came in, it would still fill up. But when it goes out, that water would stagnate. Instead of going out and drying out, it would stagnate under there. And it wouldn't take too long before you wouldn't want to walk into the house because of the smell. So anyway, please call us at 888-627-6008 and be part of the show. We'll be right back after our last break for the day.
We found the perfect house, but there's been no updating it for many years. Then we heard about the FHA 203K, where we can buy that home and get the money to fix it up all in one low interest rate loan. What a great idea.
Hey, everybody. We're back. This is Mike Young. Be part of the show by calling us at 888-627-6008. We love your comments and love hearing from the audience, even if you send us an email and we end up putting your question or answer on the next show, that's fine, too. What is a draw inspector's role on the FHA 203K versus the consultant's role? Well, the consultant has a couple of different roles, okay? One is as a consultant, and it's best that you don't get them confused. As a consultant, we help the client create a scope of work so all contractors bidding the job are bidding the same list. And we try to be as specific as possible. If you have any questions from the contractor about your specification of repairs, then, in fact, you didn't write the specification well enough. And that's what I've always used as a criteria when the contractor has to call me and say, what do you mean by this? Then I have to rewrite that specification of repair. SOR, specification of repair. So if he doesn't have any questions, then you probably, and none of them do, then you probably don't have a problem writing your spec. So the more detail, the brand names, model numbers, etc., the borrower can supply up front, and the project will flow smoothly through the completion, and they'll get the house they wanted at the end. The confusion comes with once the project funds and the work begins, the consulting is over and complete. That role for the consultant is gone. Now he is or she is a draw inspector. Many clients believe the consultant is still the consultant right through. It doesn't mean that we can't answer questions as a consultant and help the client through some of their issues that may crop up from time to time, but our role is to inspect the work that the contractor has requested on each draw inspection. We won't, however, call the contractor and criticize them for not doing their job in a timely fashion. That's not our job. It's not our role. So what a consultant is not, clients constantly tell us the contractor isn't doing their job. They didn't show up today for work. They haven't had anyone on the job for a week. And Mike, you haven't called him yet. They haven't been here for a week. Oh, Lord. Well, Mike ain't going to call them because I didn't know they weren't here for a week. I don't mind sending him a note and asking him what seems to be the problem. Is there an issue? Sometimes the issue can be that they didn't get the last draw payment yet. When I got into this business in 1994, one of the first 203Ks, I explained how it went to everybody. The contractor was there. We did draw number one. Everything was fine. Go back. They were doing draw number two. Everything seemed to be fine. And draw number three was interesting. The contractor says, you know, I like everything that's been said, and I like the way this process is supposed to work, but I'm not sure if it is working the way it's supposed to. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, shouldn't I have received draw one check by now? I said, oh, gosh, yes, this is draw three. And he says, what about draw two? When will I get in? I said, you should have had that by now. And I looked at the homeowner. I said, did you get his checks? And the homeowner looked at me and said, yeah, I have them right here in my wallet. And he pulled his wallet out and pulled two checks. I said, get him. You know, he needs the money to go buy the stuff for your house, and you're holding his money in your pocket. You know, this is not the way we discussed it. You should have given him those checks as they get to you. You sign the back and hand it to him. Oh, well, I didn't understand that part of it. And the contractor was, of course, happy, and he's done many 203Ks since then. But these are all valid issues. If the contractor isn't getting paid, he's not going to continue working past a certain point. Now, each contractor has a different threshold, a different pain threshold. How much pain will he take before he reacts to it? And they're all valid issues. But you, the homeowner, the client, is the contractor's boss, and it's up to you to call the contractor and let him know what you expect. I always recommend that once the loan closes, the homeowner and the contractor sit down and the contractor lay out a plan. And the plan might sound something like this, you know, that, okay, the loan's closed. I'm going to start placing orders now to get your materials delivered and ordered things that have to be ordered for the long range, you know, your kitchen cabinets and so forth. And we'll start getting those orders placed so they can start building that stuff. It's going to take us about a week to get all the materials together, and I've got another job that's supposed to finish up here tomorrow or the next day, so I'm going to bring that crew over here and start your project in 1 week from today. That would be a standard contractor-homeowner meeting. And the homeowner, you know, he thought, oh, gee, I thought you were going to start the day it closed. I thought you'd be out here pounding nails and stuff. And the contractor said, you know, he might say something like, well, you know, I could send a couple of guys out here day after tomorrow, not tomorrow, but day after tomorrow, and have them start doing the demo, if that makes you feel better. And that would be appropriate. That would be a good concession. The guideline indicates the contractor, once started, should have somebody present each day working on the project till it's completed. That person may be picking up parts or to be used on the project, so use some discretion. If you're not a manager type, and there's a lot of people that aren't, I've had clients that are gentlemen, and what I mean by that, they are very gentle men. They don't have a scolding word in their body, never will. They're just very polite, very shy or timid. And if the contractor picks up on that, sometimes it can be a pain. I had one where that became a problem, and I had to sit down and talk with him, as I was a drill sergeant in the military. And I had to talk to the contractor as a drill sergeant more than an inspector, which I thought was an interesting concept. But when the draw inspection happens, it's wise for the borrower and the contractor to both be present to make this thing happen in a timely fashion. Because if I get all the signatures right then, I can process that day and get the money heading towards them in the next day or two. If you have a representative there, there's a lot of contractors that are too big and they have a job superintendent, but that job superintendent is not the signer necessarily on those checks. So I then send out electronic signatures for signing or whatever. Some lenders will take them, some won't, and make us go back and get a real live signature. but it's best if everybody's present. Contractor should fill out column 3 of the draw request. What do you want me to look at? What do you want to get paid for? And it might not shock you, but it certainly shocks me to see how many of those guys will not fill out column 3 till I get there. Well, fill it out. Well, I thought we'd walk around and look at everything. I said, sign page 2. Well, I don't want to sign page 2 until I see what we're getting paid for. I said, then fill out column 3 and then sign page 2, and then we're going to go look. Until you sign it, it isn't a draw request. Until you sign that request, it isn't a request. So fill out column 3. You know you didn't work on every darn thing. What did you work on? I don't want to look at 35 items. I don't want to look at 20 items. But, you know, it's been 30 days. You've got something going. Let's go look at the things you got going. In the meantime, until you sign it, it isn't a request. So if you want to do it your way and fill it out as we walk around, you're wasting my time, and I will not be happy about that. So fill out column 3, and next time have it filled out when I arrive. If you don't set a expectation, then you're never going to meet your expectation. So the homeowner needs to set that expectation right up front on that first meeting with the contractor after it closes. You know, I expect you here every day working on the job. I understand you'll have to go get parts from time to time, and you may not be here most of the day or part of a day, and you'll be back the next morning bright and shiny with all the parts in your truck. So by having everybody there at the time of the draw inspection, everything goes so much smoother. Contractor gets paid on time. We don't like to do this as a quiz. We don't want to be questioned on issues that are between you and your contractor. That's not our job. We're not the mediator. We're not here as a reconciliator. If you're having problem with the contractor over an issue, I know I had one client that felt the contractor was raising his voice. He's talking down to me. He's raising his voice all the time. And I said, well, I'll talk to him at the next draw. And I happened to get there, get in our truck. We're walking back to the house. And he was talking really loud. And I thought, I said, you have a hearing problem? He said, oh, am I talking loud? I said, yeah, you're very loud. I said, I notice it because I do that too. Either that or I'm way too low trying to compensate it and not talk too loud. So in any case, turns out he was just hard of hearing, and his solution was to talk louder to be sure that he could be heard. And in many cases, it was often too loud. Once the borrower and everything realized that, it was good. And he wasn't yelling at them, and he managed to maintain his voice at a more reasonable level after that. So, next question. Don't know if we got time for the next question. How much time we got, boss? Anyway, it's much too long to go to that. But thanks for being with us today. We'll save that question for next week. Join us next week on Sunday between 1 and 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This broadcast is coming to you directly from our Las Vegas offices. We look forward to seeing you next time. Please bring your questions. Plan on seeing us next time and be on the air with us. Don't be shy. If you've got a question, there's probably 200 or 300 other people out there that have the same question, but like you, are afraid to get on the air. So join us next week. We'll be going on vacation next month. We'll be gone for 2 or 3 weeks, but we'll be playing some re-recordings there of our older shows, the best of. In the meantime, have a good week. See you next weekend.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you loved? Visit 203konline.com now and let's get your home makeover projects done right.